Greetings and salutations, everyone. I am AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Y-Mark Technical Net. We're going strong for over 44 years now. Every Sunday night, we sit in front of our radios at around 8 o'clock, and we tweet each other, and we teach each other, and we learn from each other, and hopefully we're entertained by each other. And I thank you once again for joining me this particular Sunday night when we try and do it all over again. As per usual, I will drop and return with the usual link. If you would like to reach me via email, one of my many email addresses is mailbag@ac2gs.com. If you wish to contact Paul and tell him about a space or a NASA-related story that you'd like to hear him discuss, his email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. As per usual, every week I cut and paste interesting articles and interesting YouTubes onto a link page and make it available to everyone, and this week is no exception. All you have to do is type into the URL of the upper text window, roy.ac2gs.com, and that should take you to that particular link page, and you can read all the articles that I found interesting. It's open 24/7. You know, if you have a little insomnia in the middle of the night, it's a good idea. You know, get you to read some interesting stuff, learn some new things. We usually have a chat room. I don't know what's going on with Chatsky, which is the guys who run it. They seem to have blocked it for a lot of people, and I haven't been able to figure out what's gone wrong. One of these days, I'll try and fix it, and when I do, I'll let you guys know. We also provide a audio stream on the Internet of the Technical Net, and because people ask me, I leave it open the rest of the week. You can listen in to Glen Oaks Repeater at any time when you have Internet access. You don't necessarily need a radio. Just a cell phone will do, or a desktop, or a laptop, anything that has Internet access. You can get there by typing into the URL, technet.ac2gs.com. Also, I always like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, offers an archive of the Y-Mark Technical Net to go as far back as September of 2006. His site is called amateurradio.tv. And please check it out. It has the wisdom of a lot of very clever amateur radio operators who have either moved out of the area over the years or unfortunately become silent keys. So a lot of their wisdom is left in the form of an MP3 series of files. So avail yourself of their wisdom. It's still very, very useful. Let me drop for a second, and I'll tell you what we've got planned for tonight. Okay. Regular standard operating technical net, no guest speakers, unfortunately. I will give you some new information as far as artificial intelligence, for what it's worth, and then we will move from there on to the usual, the main segment, the questions, topics and conversation about technical subjects and amateur radio. Hopefully, the first few people on the list will be amateur radio related, since this is a amateur radio repeater. But we will accept any questions or comments or topics related to science and technology. I will put everyone on the list, and we'll see you in an orderly fashion, I hope. That should be fun. That should theoretically take us to 10:15 in full. WS2N will join us for the SpaceNet report. That should take us approximately to 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on everything and wish you well for the coming week. That's what we got planned, as long as my shack continues to work correctly and the repeater continues to work correctly and I continue to work correctly, and also I don't get thrown off of All-Star. Last week was kind of amazing. I didn't get thrown off once, but you never know what each week brings. So that's the plan. Let me drop for a second, and I'll come back and tell you a couple little stories about AI. Before we get to the AI story, I just want to point out that financially things are very, very weird lately. Not to mention how silver crashed this week, but Oracle, I think, lost 8% of stock value this week. Microsoft lost about 7.5% of their stock value this week. And NVIDIA played oopsie with a planned $100 billion investment in OpenAI. They came back and said, well, we didn't really say it was definite. We were just thinking about it. So NVIDIA is kind of out of luck for $100 billion, but they're running around trying to find more money. They're supposedly asking SoftBank for $30 billion. They're asking if Amazon would like $50 billion. And so everyone's still kind of empty pockets and looking for billions of dollars to crank out this this idea of super intelligence that hasn't quite visited us. So if you got a couple extra billion dollars and you want to give a good cause, you know, call up Sam Altman. I'm sure he'll take your call if you suggest that you got some billion of dollars to give you. Anyway, that's the weird economic financial situation of AI. Let me drop for a second and I'll tell you about an interest study I recently saw. Okay. This is a very interesting study. The big question mark that I've had for years, I've shared it with you, is whether or not artificial intelligence, or at least the generative form that that operates large language models, is scalable. Scalability simply means that if you put more horsepower to it, you get a lot more work out of it. You know, in the old days when ChatGPT was at 3 or something, 3.0, when they doubled the infrastructure, when they doubled the number of processors that were being used on ChatGPT, they kind of doubled the amount of functionality, which was very nice. And so the smart guys there thought that they could just keep doubling it until they had a godlike super genius. Well, there's one study out there that suggests that that's not the case and hasn't been for a while. They say that for the last year, these large language models are not completely scalable. When they doubled the infrastructure of one of the more recent versions of ChatGPT, instead of doubling its functionality, they only increased its functionality by something like 20%. And the theory suggests that maybe if they double it again, instead of doubling the functionality or even 20%, the next doubling will only give them about 8% improvement. So this looks like a wall. It looks like diminishing returns, and it looks like a lot of trouble for all these guys who are throwing billions and sometimes trillions into the fire. So if it is scalable, then who knows? Maybe there will be a true artificial intelligence that comes from it, or in these furtive imagination, a godlike creature of super genius. But most likely, in my humble little opinion and the humble opinion of guys actually with doctorates in the field, it is probably going to hit a wall, and it's never going to go anything close to that. And all these trillions of dollars are going to have problems when they try and pay it off. Although ChatGPT and such are fun toys, no one's really willing to pay a lot of money. That's why they're considering adding ads to it, which will make it a real remarkable experience, I'm sure. So, you know, for you fellow AI doubters out there, and again, I don't think it's a complete fiasco. I think it's just a limited type of technology that will make billions, but unfortunately, people have invested trillions. So the math doesn't work out. So that's my little, that study is very elucidating, at least to me. So if you have any questions or comments about this before we get to the main segment of the technical net, please feel free, hit the push to talk. Okay, I guess no one has any particular questions, comments, although sometimes we re-enter this topic later on the technical net. You know, people need to get comfy in their chairs and such before they want to kind of deal with AI sometimes. So we'll see what the future brings. So we'll move on to the main segment of our technical net. We're open questions and topics and conversations on amateur radio operating, amateur radio technology, and science and technology in general. So if anyone has any questions or comments or topics for discussion tonight, please feel free to hit that push to talk, give me your call sign, your first name, and whether it's amateur radio related or in technology.
N2Z Echo Alpha, question about electronics.
Okay, what's your first name, sir?
Gulf Lima Echo November. And my question is basically, I pulled a whole bunch of transformers off an inverter board. They're labeled 120/12. Each side of the transformer has four taps on it. What's the trick to finding out which one's primary, which one's secondary? And what instruments would you use to figure that out?
Okay. What's your first name, sir?
I am Glenn.
Okay, Glenn, we'll hold off a second. I want to see if I can put anyone else on our little list here before we start the topic. So if anyone else would like to submit any questions or topics, conversation, please hit that push to talk. Okay, well, it looks like we might have a very, very quick night, but you never know. People come late. People remember questions. Anyway, let's get to you, Glenn. Really, there's no fundamental characteristics of which is primary and which is secondary. The important thing is the ratio of the turns on each of them. So, one will have more turns than the other, and that determines whether, if it's a power transformer, it determines the voltage, whether it goes up or goes down, or in the case of, say, an audio transformer, how it transforms the input impedance to the output impedance. So, ultimately, it's always nice if they actually included the legend someplace on the transformer, but sometimes you don't get what you want. I guess theoretically, if you have a source for a low current limited alternating current, you could put it up to a relatively small amount of voltage and put it into one of the windings, and then have something as simple as a voltmeter connect to the other, as long as you don't excessively, throw too much current and probably overheat it, you can find out what the voltage output is. And, if you want the exact opposite transformation, you just exchange the input wires for the output wires. Anyone else have any recommended method to calculate how a specs of a transformer could be detected?
I saw something with the Brink Expert where you could check certain transformers. I'm not sure, but I thought I saw that.
Okay. When you say Rig Expert, do you mean the VNA is capable of checking transformers? You can, in a way, you can check transformers with a VNA with a known input, because you could check it for its impedance. So you could have an impedance source at one end and then measure the impedance at the output wiring, and by the transformed impedance, you can figure out what the winding ratios are.
Okay, so I guess the easiest way is just put both on one side and see what comes out of the other.
Yeah, you just be cautious about the current limiting because, you know, again, it sort of depends on what it's designed for. If it's designed as a power transformer, you probably have no problem. If it's designed as a audio transformer, it you know, you might burn up the winding.
Well, since I pulled these off an inverter board and half a dozen in a row, I guess it's power stuff. So to break out the variac, set it up to 12 volts, put it in and see what comes out the other side.
Yeah, that's about it. As far as I could think, that's the easiest approach.
Okay, I'll give that a shot. Thank you for the help. Appreciate it. N2Z Echo Alpha.
Okay, very good. Please, if you have the opportunity, come back again and tell us how it worked out.
Comment.
Yes?
I was just thinking... one of the things I've run into quite common that ends up in my bins are 24-volt AC power supplies that are pretty low current, I don't know, 500 milliamps or 300 milliamps, 100 milliamps sometimes, or the like. You know, you could use that as your test source and just you can figure out your windings and ratios with something like that a little safer than playing with 120-volt mains, KC2 SHL.
Yeah, but Glenn says he has a variac, so he can wind it down. In fact, I think he mentioned he was going to wind it down to 12 volts going into the primary. John, any reply?
That's my comment, KC2, SHL.
Okay. There's someone out there that's, 90% noise, 95% noise. I can't recognize them even. So if there's something you could do to get to the repeater a little bit better, wiggle the whip antenna, go near the window, whatever, give it a try. Well, we've only kind of eaten up 19 minutes of the technical mess, so we got a lot of free time here. Hopefully there's people out there with questions or comments or topics that will keep this alive a little bit longer than it has now. So if you're out there, you got a question or a comment or a topic that you want to discuss or have discussed or talk about, please hit that push to talk. Yes, Sam, I could just make it out. You're about 80% noise. There's a couple of little portions that I was able to recognize everything, but it's a bit noisy. Is there anything you can do on your end to kind of boost the signal to the repeater?
Boy, I'm very surprised that I have an issue. I don't know. Is that copying now?
It's a little bit better. You kind of drop out for a second or two at a time. But, it's not a strong signal. It's not your usual signal. So I'm not quite sure what's going on there. I'm giving Sam a little time to kind of see if he could tweak up his signal. Well, while we're waiting for Sam, if anyone has any questions or topics or comments for tonight, feel free to have push to talk. A lot of noise.
Okay, thanks, boys. I have some problem here. Okay, thanks.
Okie doke. I'm starting to wonder. I hope the repeater isn't having a bad night. Two bad signals. And in a minute or two distance. So hope that's not the case, but we'll see. That certainly is going to put a damper on the net if a lot of people can't be hurt. But we'll see how it goes. Once again, this is AC2GS with the Limar Technical Net. If anyone has any questions for tonight or comments or topics for discussion, feel free. Hit that push to introduce yourself.
One more time, Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf.
Much, much, much better, Sam.
Okay. Good to hear you. I just pulled out the manual for my rig expert 35 Zoom. On page 21, they talk about using the analyzer to check out RF transformers. So apparently there is a use for rig experts and transformers. Back to you.
Okay, but strictly speaking, what Glenn was talking about seemed to be power transformers, not RF. They were operating at 60 hertz, not RF ranges.
Okay, right. By the way, Mike, question or topic for the night is how do you adjust a Morse code key, Kia? How do you adjust the key? If you have any thoughts, I appreciate it.
Okay. It obviously, it depends upon what type of key. If it's a bug, then, you know, lots of luck. It's a struggle for a lot of people. Other people kind of think of it as a challenge. But with assuming that you have an iambic key, it's simply a matter of adjusting the tension. You know, the least expensive iambic keys use a spring. More expensive ones use magnets, and you can adjust the distance. You could stretch the spring, or you could stretch the spring in order to adjust the friction and how nice the feel is. And the idea is to get the balance good for your particular method of using the key. So there's only a few screw settings on either pivot point that determine that, and you adjust it to feeling. I think there are people who actually have little levers and such where they're measuring the amount of force that the Morse code key works for some types of keys, but it's not really that esoteric. You do it by feel, unless you want to kind of do it to specs. There's probably loads of YouTubes where there's a nice visual representation of adjusting the little knobs on the axis.
Thank you. Question, do you have a Bengali? And if you do, have you found it to be any significantly different from other cheaper iambic keys?
Okay, I don't have a Bengali. Bengali, I think. They're very pretty. I aspire to get one, but I don't know if I ever told you, Dory, but I found a very aesthetically pleasing iambic key made in the United Kingdom by two guys. Each of them had a little shop, and they made the same configuration, and I think one got sick, and the other one got sick as well, and so it was called the Chevron key. And at that point, the one remaining guy who built them had some extras still sitting in his shop that he hadn't sold. And he was a very nice guy. He offered to ship it to me from the UK without me paying anything. He said, "I'll ship it to you. Use it. See if you like it. If you don't like it, ship it back. If you do like it, send me a check." And so I got it, and I played with it, and I sent the gentleman a check. So I have a Chevron. The difference between more expensive and less expensive, aside from the fact that it's more expensive, tends to be, you know, chrome-coated or gold-coated or some, you know, real shiny metal. They usually use magnets to position the pivot of the axis rather than springs. It's a lot less expensive to just put a spring in the assembly than it is to fit a set of magnets, and then you have to kind of tweak them. But they certainly run smoother than a spring, because I have the other type as well. But again, I have a Chevron from the United Kingdom. But the Begallias are beautiful. They range in price all over the place, and I think they probably do sell a spring-based version. It's on their lower end, but the upper end are all kind of magnetically, positioned.
Thank you. And I was afraid to get one with magnets, but I guess that's a step up in terms of the performance or the quality of it, so I won't be so afraid to look into that aspect of it. Thank you again, Roy, and I'll be listening. Thank you.
You're welcome. Now, the only downside for the magnet is it's usually a significantly more offensive movement, but it has a real nice, smooth effect, magnets versus springs. Now, springs are still a little crotchety, where magnets are, you know, when you got them set up right, they're very smooth.
Copy that, QSO.
So, Guido, thank you for participating. Once again, this is AC2GS with the Limar Technical Net. We're open for business. If anyone has any questions or comments or topics for tonight, feel free, hit that push to talk.
Well, nobody else jumps in. I'll ask you how you found 10 meters today if you were on WB2BXO.
Sure, Frank. It was very good. I enjoyed it immensely. Usually, I've mentioned this year, you know, once the geomagnetic storms stopped and propagation improved, I had this curious response to everyone. They pretty much kind of stayed on their own frequency. They didn't come up to 28.380, which is our net frequency. So I would see the activity on my fan adapter, but I would only be talking to Brooklyn and Queens, and sometimes Manhattan. But today was completely different. The first few contacts I got after 11 o'clock was Arkansas and Texas, Kansas, and Louisiana, so it was very nice. The second half of the net was primarily local. We had some nice rag-chewing conversations, and we finished up at 1 o'clock when I usually finish up the 10-meter net. So it was a very enjoyable experience, and I got a good taste of other states for a change and also local.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, the only thing, I worked on 10 meters this weekend. Yesterday I worked KP5 stroke MP3 VI. The guys who put two remote radios on, that's a Cheo Island, which is about 20 miles from Puerto Rico for a month, after apparently a big permitting battle with the Wildlife Service. They're running a 25-watt solar-powered station, so they're not always easy to hear. They've been on 10-meter sideband, but very weak. But I did work them on 10-meter CW for a new 10-meter contest, and also worked them on 20 CW the other night. So those who are interested in such things, they're uploading to LOTW, to the league, every hour. So unlike a lot of the expeditions, you get an automatic valid confirmation for award purposes almost immediately. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, very good. Sounds like you had fun.
Excellent.
Is that you, Sam? You're noisy again.
Yes, it is. I said I have another interesting situation to discuss with you, if you would be okay.
Okay, sure. After we finish with Frank, I'll go back to you, okay?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, and I mean, I'm sure there are people, some of the purists are saying, I haven't actually heard anyone say it, but it wouldn't surprise me if there are some people, some guys saying, hey, it's not a real D expedition, they just put a remote radio on the island and operate it through a Starlink terminal, but it's still an interesting technical accomplishment to do that. And go ahead and let Sam go ahead. He probably has something that's of more interest to the group here. WB2BXO.
Okay, we'll get to him in a second. Yeah, I don't know. I hate, I try never to be a gatekeeper for the hobby. And, tell people what is amateur radio and what isn't amateur radio. You know, if you're having fun and you're using a radio, that's fine enough for me. I'm not a purist. I think it's kind of silly for a hobby to be a purist. You know, if you're managing the Olympics or something, I could understand strict rules and such. But, you know, this is a hobby and you're supposed to have fun on it, with it. So, you know, if you enjoyed yourself, to sit there and say, this isn't exactly radio. This is only 32.73% radio. You know, what's the point of...
Yeah, not only is there no money at stake in the league awards, it's all, just for the challenge. But they actually charge you to buy the certificates and plaques. My wife said, how's it an award if you have to pay to get it?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, as a guy, I assume you've gotten these things in the mail. I got them year after year after year. You know, Famous American, that's a complete scam. I got these letters that say you've been nominated to Famous Americans, and if you would like a copy of the book and a plaque, send us a check for $62.85. And that's a grift. I don't think this one in your case is a grift. I think it's just guys who just don't have enough money and don't feel terribly generous to the people engaged in the contest, or, you know, they're just trying to save as much money as they can through it. But there are people out there who readily use scams like this to make a decent living. Who's Who apparently makes a nice living, you know, not only that book that's in the library, a list of famous Americans for this year, or famous scientists, or famous... I got a whole bunch of different classifications that I got nominated for, if I could only send them a check.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of people who aren't very happy with the ARRL and the way they do business. I actually got my membership renewed at a deep discount, much to my surprise. I called the lady on the phone because I couldn't log in or something. I might have told you this before. Anyway, I called them on the phone because I couldn't log in or find the right page or something, and I said, by the way, I remember back in the 70s, you used to give a discount for legally blind amateurs. And she said, yeah, sure. If you sign a form, you can get that. And I said, how much is it? She said, $36. I said, $36 discount? Well, no. She said, $36 total for 3-year renewal. I'm like, okay, send me the affidavit. I'll sign it. Go ahead.
Ah, very good. No, I don't think you ever told me that story, but it makes some sense. I don't know. I've been annoyed at the ARRL since they decided to stop sending magazines unless you pay an additional magazine fee. And rather than just give you the damn magazine until you were finished with the year that you had subscribed to, they cut the magazine off at January 1st. So I thought that was real chintzy on their part.
Yeah, they are kind of chintzy, especially considering what they charge. And as I said, they charge you for the awards and certificates and stuff. What was it? You probably saw the controversy over the guy down here in Pennsylvania, the vice director, who refused to sign what amounts to an NDA because he said Connecticut nonprofits are not allowed to use NDAs. So they fired him, quote-unquote, declared him ineligible. I don't know if he really cares that much about getting fired from a job that was costing him money. Go ahead.
No, I didn't hear that news story.
Yeah, it's on this week. They obviously don't, because it's the league, don't tell the whole story. But they mention in, what do they call it? Amateur Radio Newsline is the private one. I forget what the league calls their 5-minute podcast. They mentioned that he had been declared ineligible because he didn't sign form number something or other, but they don't really explain, obviously don't explain his version of the controversy, which he's explained in detail to the local clubs in Pennsylvania. Go ahead.
AC2GS. I don't know what's going on with the ARRL the last 10 years. They're trying to run it like a business apparently, and they think a business is glacially opaque, and you're not allowed, if you have anything to do with the organization, you're not allowed to have any disagreements publicly. You kind of keep it in house or such nonsense. And, you know, they've been kind of loosening it a little bit, then tightening it, then loosening it, then tightening it. I don't know what the hell's going on in their heads. They kind of have lost track of that this is an organization, at least in my mind, for amateur radio operators. It's kind of treating it as a business where the customers are amateur radio operators, which, I don't know. I don't think that's a clever idea. I think that's going to kind of accelerate the fading away of an organization when it doesn't treat its members like members and just customers. You know, businesses aren't always operating these days with the customers always right. So I think this is just another step towards the graveyard, unfortunately. It's a shame, and I don't know what's driving it. Maybe it's financial problems. I don't know, but this is not a fraternal kind of group of people anymore. This is like belonging to the DMV.
Yeah, well, I've had similar gripes since I became a hand in the 1970s. You know, people even back then were calling the league little more than a publishing house. But I guess it's kind of being taken to an extreme now. And, yeah, treating it, and apparently, since it's a 501(c) nonprofit, unfortunately, I don't remember the fellow's name. I've spoken to him a number of times since he's, I think he's a member of the local club here. He's an attorney, if I remember correctly, and says that under the Connecticut nonprofit law, they're not allowed to run it that way. I don't know whether he's going to go to court and say, hey, that's not allowed. You have to give me my, you know, I'm asking the courts to give me my vice directorship back. First of all, I don't know if the courts will do it. I don't think they like getting involved in arguments like that. And I don't know if he wants to spend what I'm sure is substantial amounts of money involved. But I guess if they are in fact, if he in fact can make a good case that they're violating the Connecticut nonprofit organizations law, he can try it.
I would tend to guess, if I was in a guessing mood, that he's not going to take it that far. It puts you very much into an adversarial position with the rest of the organization, and for the sake of a hobby, that would kind of accelerate whatever is going to kind of eventually happen to the ARRL. So he'll probably just take his ball and go home. Thanks for telling me, guys. Unfortunately, I don't know. I haven't been keeping up with the news. I get an email to me every week. Sometimes I look through it, and sometimes I don't. Say again. A lot of noise.
82 FIU portable. Roy, you got a copy?
Yes.
Salaries is what's ripping down.
Well, yeah, money. Just the money in general. It doesn't necessarily have to be salaries. It could be expenses. There's a lot of places to sneak money through people. I mean, it's a shame if that's what's going on, if it just kind of comes down to just greed. Because, there's so much greed elsewhere. You hope to have a couple of safe spaces where people aren't counting the money all the time.
I wouldn't have known about this either, Roy, if the guy hadn't a Zoom presentation to the local club. If you're not in the area, you might not have heard about it. When I have the time in the evening, somebody sends me a Zoom link for either a local meeting or another club doing an interesting presentation, I'll try to get a heart and try to find out about these things.
Usually these things just kind of fade away because the individuals don't want to particularly fight with the ARRL. They seem to be a little bit more disgusted, and they take their ball and they go home. I remember the nonsense that went on with Rhea, who was our local section leader, and the guys over in Connecticut. I don't think they appreciated her because eventually they found a good excuse to kick her to the curb.
People in the ARRL expect to be paid for everything they do. It's not just one salary, but it is also things that they need to do. They want to be reimbursed. So it is not what you would consider to be a volunteer organization. No, it's a money-making organization.
Well, you can kind of feel the pull that they have sudden. All of a sudden, they're a business. And again, we're not members. We're not part of the organization. We're just customers. So yeah, I pretty much feel the commercialization of the organization. Unfortunately, I don't think it's a good, healthy move. I understand that greed is a very common motivating force. So again, it's we've kind of unfortunately grown more and more greedy as the year move on.
This managed at the top, not at the lower end. The lower end is for us. Mismanaged at the top.
Yeah. I mean, at one point or another, some guy who was the president who kind of published all these things that we should run this organization as a business, I think he was finally forced out. But, I mean, the guy who replaced him was a businessman, and the guy who replaced that guy was a businessman. So, you know, they just kind of kept their mouth closed, and they started to issue internal rules that people who attended these big meetings, you know, were not allowed to just go out and complain and argue. That, you know, they argued indoors maybe, but once the meeting was over, they shut their face. So, yeah, I think they're treating this as a profitable business, unfortunately.
32FIU, I think we're on the same track, Roy. Thank you.
Yes, I agree. Thank you. Anyway, that's the nature of the beast these days. A lot of too many people are worried that they didn't get a taste of you know, the money. So, you know, they want to drink too. I don't know. Not a very generous time in our national history, but you know, it's we kind of fluctuate back and forth. You know, where people say the business of the United States is business. I don't think so. I think there's much more important things that our country should stand in front of and, you know, take care of. But I guess if you're a greedy billionaire, then, yeah, sure, the business of America is business. It's a shame. But then, you know, this is, again, not the political mess. But human nature is capable of great things and terrible things. And we kind of see a little bit of both these days.
Yeah, but apparently the point is, and then let you go on with the net, is that the ARRL is organized in Connecticut as a Connecticut nonprofit organization. It is not organized as a profit-making business, at least until somebody does the paperwork to change it, which I think can be done. And it's also, under federal law, a 501(c) educational nonprofit. And, in fact, most radio clubs are. The local club here said, oh, we couldn't possibly do that. How do we qualify? And they got back to me a few weeks later, and they said, yeah, we applied for that. We can, yeah, most clubs are. Anyway, but, yeah, so they are legally a nonprofit, and apparently nonprofits aren't supposed to have those kinds of NDAs. Anyway, we're going around in circles, so go ahead and see if somebody has something more worthwhile to talk about. WB2B.
Okay, I'll do that in a minute. I just want to point out that OpenAI actually started life as a nonprofit organization, and somehow they developed a branch of a nonprofit that was a profit organization. Eventually, I think they have plans to just break it out entirely because they want to sell stock. You certainly can't sell stock in a nonprofit organization. So, you know, laws are very strange as far as nonprofits and profitable are concerned. So you can play a lot of games. But, yeah, I think the problem would be you can't kind of sue the ARRL based on Pennsylvania laws since they're incorporated even as a nonprofit in Connecticut. Connecticut may have different rules as far as nonprofits and NDAs.
Yeah, well, he's talking about Connecticut law, not Pennsylvania law. That it is a Connecticut organization organizing under Connecticut law, but you see, right, Pennsylvania law doesn't get, as I understand it, doesn't get into it at all. You know, far be it for me to understand the way of of attorneys and NDAs and all that kind of thing. And, yeah, I remember the OpenAI story. It's quite fairly common, by the way, as I understand it. I remember looking at this issue in graduate school for some project or other back in the 80s, that nonprofits can have or can operate profit-making organizations, and that's actually fairly common. Go ahead.
Okay, I was unaware of that. It sounds kind of convoluted personally, but, you know, a lot of what Sam, the CEO of CEO of OpenAI seems convoluted to me, but, you know, okay, whatever the law says. Thankfully, I'm not a lawyer.
Well, you know what our mother said years ago, you either become a lawyer or become a doctor, or we don't know you. No, just kidding. Anyway, I'll be listening here for a while, WB2BXO.
Okie doke. Sam, you have another question tonight? I don't know, your signal is you're pulling out, what little I hear is noise. So whatever you did to fix it the last few times, try it again.
Copy, Roy.
Yeah, you sound wonderful now. Is there some strange little kind of biphasic thing you do where you put the handy-talkie down or you move the antenna or you walk away from the window, because it kind of alternates between pretty good signal and just noise and falling out of the repeater. Now it's noise again. I caught the very end of that transmission, but it was noise up until then. Noise.
November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Yeah, John, what can I do for?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. Tuned into the net probably a couple minutes late, and I caught the gist of your AI discussion, but I just wanted to make sure. Basically, what you said was that Microsoft announced that they were not going to make as large of a commitment financially that they had stated they would previously, and that affected negatively the price of the NVIDIA stock. Was that the gist of it?
No, it was NVIDIA that pulled their $100 billion offer to OpenAI. The problem, I think, with Microsoft is, you know, they've gone partnership with OpenAI, and OpenAI has kind of suffered prestige lately. The powers that be, a lot of them, think that there are other AI engines that are more cost-effective, more advanced, and they're concerned that the precipitous loss of revenue with OpenAI. There's some reports suggest that they're going to completely run out of money, including borrowed money, by 2027. The best financed guy with AI now is Google, because Google has this almost empty, endless, bottomless pit source of ad revenue and such. They make their own chips. You know, it's all done in-house. So the one company that's probably financially the most secure is Google. So that kind of screws Microsoft, because they're really, you know, connected at the heart with OpenAI. So I think that's what caused the abrupt kind of collapse in their stock value. People are getting a little antsy about Sam and his company, and they don't know if it's going to survive. There's a lot more naysayers who suggest that they're going to be the first guys who get bankrupted.
And that's Microsoft, you're saying, that's possibly going to go bankrupt. Am I correct?
No, it's OpenAI. OpenAI has a major investment, though, in OpenAI. So it's going to damage Microsoft. It's not going to probably kill Microsoft. But, again, I think the people's general attitude in the industry is the first company that's going to go is going to be OpenAI, which is, you know, interesting, because if you asked everyone a year ago, they would say that OpenAI is the darling of the industry. But unfortunately, they're in deep debt, and it's getting worse and worse. I mentioned that they're trying to get $30 billion. OpenAI is trying to get $30 billion from SoftBank, and they're trying to get $50 billion from Amazon. So they're bleeding money, and you know, all they have to kind of offer recently is putting ads on ChatGPT, which is probably going to decrease people's use. You know, you can go to Gemini from Google, and no one's going to set you up with any additional ads, because they got all the money they need.
Okay, Ray, thank you. Thank you for bringing me up to pace. I apologize. I'm not following it as closely by any means as you are, and, you know, I enjoy your updates on it, and so these names, you know, Microsoft, OpenAI, et cetera, okay, I got it into perspective now. And just to further refine it, if my memory serves correct, OpenAI was that company that Elon was involved with, is that correct? And then they had a split, that's the OpenAI, correct?
Yeah. Sam Altman set up, like I mentioned earlier, a nonprofit organization, and then went to the, you know, the big money guys, and you know, he didn't really ask for a lot of money. This is long before the $1 billion and the $1 trillion. So I think Elon gave him seed money, something like $30 billion for a position in OpenAI, and being Elon, he wanted to kind of take OpenAI over. Like he's done before to other companies, but Sam Altman kind of stopped them short, and so he feels that his initial $30 million should pay him back $100 billion now, even though, again, OpenAI has no real money. I mean, they're just kind of running it into the furnace right now. But yeah, that's OpenAI's origin story. There were a bunch of other wealthy Silicon Valley guys who donated $30 million at the startup. It was purely going to be a nonprofit.
Yeah, if I remember correctly, the intention was to sort of curb AI and police it, so that it didn't spin out of control and turn into something malevolent. Is that accurate?
Yeah, exactly. Unfortunately, you know, this reads very Tolkien, and all these billionaires are Tolkien fiends, but, you know, they turn to the dark side of the force.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely interesting. And I know from your previous commentary, felt that there's a good possibility that we're in a bubble with all of these AI different stocks and everything, that the potential that was being marketed was not realistic. Is this now what you're seeing possibly, you know, the beginning of the dam breaking, you know, just the beginnings, or you think that's further down the line? You know, what's your assessment right now?
I think there's a lot of cracks in the surface, and